Stupid.
Once more into the breach, dear friend.
Let's close the wall up with our English today.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting episode of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure.
I feel like we're muffled today.
I feel a little muffled too, so you could always excite the mics.
I'm exciting them as we speak.
Okay, the Michaels are excited. Okay, The Personal Wealth Coach is not only the name of a riveting radio program, which means it's extremely painful to be riveted.
Ouch!
Yes, and it is also the name of a registered investment advisory firm, registered with the Securities and Exchange Commission. Those are our primary United States Securities and Exchange Commission, which, by the way, is officially shut down at this point. La, 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 la.
The whole government is shut down at this point.
I guess that means we're sort of semi-unregulated until the government shuts up, which would be the opposite of shut down, right?
Of course.
Okay. But at any rate, the Personal Wealth Coach is an SEC-registered investment advisory firm in Salado, Texas, that does business here, there, and yon in accordance with the laws and rules and regulations thereof.
And it's an important thing to note here. Just because we are registered with the SEC doesn't say anything about their approval of us.
They don't
approve of anybody.
I'm sure they're
so we not, just register with
right,
them.
Right. They're totally disapproving of everything.
Not everything.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
fair practices they are approving of.
Yeah, but they don't.
But they have a different definition of fair.
Right. Right. It's. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, they are regulators.
Yeah.
And we are moderators, and we are at war with each other by definition.
No, this is not Lincoln County.
Oh, okay. Well, my name is not Billy either. So,
no,
okay.
No.
So, anyway.
You are far from being a kid.
You got that. Hey, the two guys, Jake and Jeff, or Jeff and Jake, depending on your perspective, who are both bald-headed and both have beards, who are the principal advisors at the Personal Wealth Coach, the Registered Investment Advisor, also happen to be the two principal voices on this radio program, and it is not coincidence that they have the same name. But we don't give out investment advice on this program.
Nope.
We give out investment education, and there's a big difference because investment advice is something that has to be suited to the individual.
Yeah. What you'll never hear us say is exactly what to buy or sell on this program.
Well, now, I don't know. I mean, we often have said it's a good idea to buy low and sell high.
That's true. It was a misstatement on my part. We have told people what to buy and sell. You buy low and you sell high.
As right.
Will Rogers said, buy a stock when it's down, you sell it when it goes up.
If it don't go up,
don't buy it in the first place.
Right. And a lot of corporations have tried to do that with options.
You know, all you have to do is follow that advice and you'll be extremely wealthy.
That's right. That's
just
exactly
if it doesn't go up, don't buy it in the first place.
And the information that we present educationally on this radio program has been obtained from what we consider to be highly reliable sources.
Or at least semi-highly reliable sources.
Which is a nice way of saying we do our best to avoid fake news. And but we don't guarantee its accuracy or completeness.
We do our best to do our own research on everything that we're doing. But there are some certain areas of the media that we look at and say they generally do their research, mm-hmm. so mm-hmm. we're going to trust them.
Yeah.
That is not a tabloid. We're not right. going to look at the Inquirer and say, yes, of course, the Bat Boy was
actually
born yesterday.
We could say it the way I memorized it a long time ago.
What's that?
We're going to do our best to do our duty to God and country to be square and obey the Scout Law.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
The B square.
Too, a long
the
time
B
ago.
Square is what's really cool.
Yeah, it's very important to be square.
That's right.
Geometry gets involved with ethics quite a lot.
You got that. I completely agree. Anyway, the telephone number to call in here, if you would like to query us as to something that has to do with investments, the economy, or you just want to make a firm political statement about something that has to do with investments or the economy.
Yes,
or things
let's keep
of that
it.
Deal.
Let's keep it to investment and economy related politics. Let's keep it to non-sports related. Although, if it's a sports related economic issue, we'll talk about it. Sports related sports issues? No, we will show a ignorance so deep
right.
that we're ignorant of what we're ignorant of.
The profoundness of our ignorance with regard to team sports or sports in general is unplumbable.
Which means that it has no lead in it. It's unleaded.
Right, which used to be a significant kind of gasoline, but not anymore.
For most people, that didn't make any sense. But the word plumb, like plumbing, means lead from Latin. And so we are unleaded when it comes to finding the depth of our knowledge. It's very, very shallow knowledge.
If you eat a plum, you've eaten lead?
No, because it doesn't have a B in it.
Oh.
If you put a B in there, you would get lead poisoning.
Oh, I got it.
I have seen bees in a plum tree, but I don't think they're spelled the same way as the letter B. So you can tell we're in a bit of a mood this morning.
We are in a bit of a mood. It's because the government is shut down and our regulator officially is no longer regulating. I read that this morning.
They'll be back.
Well, you know.
We have to treat it as if they are at all times.
Yes, but I recognize that the SEC has stopped all actions pending a government shut up.
Yeah, well, yeah, I wish it was a government shut up. I've been telling the government to shut up for a long time. They just shut down.
It's very clear that the opposite of a shut down would be a shut up.
Okay, and I mentioned this on the car right here. For those of you that have been following this, this is the first government shutdown since 2013. In 2013, the government shut down because the Republicans did not want to pass a spending bill. They didn't want to raise the debt ceiling based on the Affordable Care Act being passed.
Right, right.
So the acronym for the Affordable Care Act was the ACA.
Right.
Well, now the Democrats are shutting down the government because an executive order isn't being extended and there's no legislative movement to create something for DACA, which is
D-A-C-A. That's the Democrats' ACA.
Right. So what we have to do, to be very clear on this, I am going to lobby our government officials to make it illegal to use the letters ACA in any acronym in that order because it leads to government shutdowns.
Shutdowns.
We've got a caller on 773-1400. Caller, you are on the air with the personal wealth coach. Go ahead.
Nope, they're not.
Not on the air with the personal wealth coach.
People call
and then hang up. I would too if I heard us.
Maybe it's wrong numbers.
I don't call us. That's pretty, here we go.
Someone else is trying again.
All right, caller on 773-1400. You are on the air. Go ahead.
Sorry, guys, I couldn't resist this. In reference to the earlier part of your conversation, you're just being plumb stupid.
We are plumb stupid. We practice it on a regular basis.
Thanks for the call.
Do you ever think about the term stupid? That means you're stooped over.
Yeah, it's just leaning over with, if you're plumb stupid, it means you're leaning over from carrying lead.
That would be true. That would be true. That would be the opposite of unleaded.
Yeah, and we're talking about acronyms as if that's the thing to stop the government from shutting down or shutting up. Or I wouldn't mind them shutting up, but it's when they shut down that's a problem.
Well, I don't think they're capable of shutting up.
No, that would be impossible. You know, they have that old joke, how do you tell when a politician is lying, his mouth is moving or her mouth is moving?
No. It used to be that. Now his fingers are moving.
Oh, yeah, it's tweeting, typing. Yeah, it doesn't matter. Politicians are politicians. This is something we'll cover this to some extent quickly. the government shutdown, and then probably get some references to it to the rest of the program. We've got another caller on 773-1400.
That's because the government is shut down. We're getting
right.
these calls.
All right, caller, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, my name's Joe from Temple.
Hi,
hello.
Joe from Temple.
Hi. I read your newsletter each week, and I really enjoy it, and I've got a question.
Oh. Okay.
Okay, you said that the last 4 weeks, individual investors are putting a lot of funds into the equity market.
Yes, according to Bank of America.
Yeah, Bank of America, Merrill Lynch. Merrill Lynch isn't gone yet. It's still Bank of America.
Yeah,
Merrill Lynch. Okay. Soon Merrill Lynch will not be part of that name.
Yes, go ahead.
And also you said the individual investors are putting a lot of funds into the bond.
Yes.
In the bond market. Yes. And I don't understand that because with the interest rates going up and your value of bond going down.
Give that man a Nobel Prize.
You obviously are very astute.
Why would anybody want to do that?
That is the definition, the very definition of the term irrational exuberance. People are exuberant about something irrationally.
Well,
interest rates going up should be a bad news situation for bonds, and people are still buying them.
I really think that very few people understand that as interest rates go up, a bond that you hold at that moment.
Did you hurl it? Is that what you said?
Either way.
Yeah, you can hurl your bonds too.
Declines in market value. And what they simply see is, oh, look at this. It's just like a lot of bonds. Longer-term bonds are still selling out there at around 120, meaning you pay 20% more than the face value of the bond for the bond because it pays a higher interest rate. And, of course, when it matures, you only get back $1,000 per bond, but you pay $1,200.
Yeah.
You pay $1,200 for the bond, and then it gets returned to you as interest over that period of time, which is taxable. And why do people buy those? Because they have high coupons on them. They say, look, I got a bond here, that U.S. government treasury bond, that pays you 5.6%.
Except that they're not getting 5.6% on their $1,200.
Yeah,
their yield to maturity is much lower than that, because they're going to mature with $1,000, not $1,200.
We've often said that people don't understand stocks or the stock market or a lot of things about the stock market, and they behave irrationally. But when it comes to the bond market, I think they're far worse in their behavior. One of the big reasons that people are continuing, two reasons they're buying bonds, is the interest rate goes up. They look at, oh, look at that, a higher interest rate than I could have gotten the other day. Therefore, it must be good to buy.
No.
The other thing that they look at is, well, you know, my father and my grandfather bought bonds, and they grew in value steadily over the last 38 years. That's true.
It's
We've had 38 years of bull market in bonds.
Right, 38 years of lowered interest. The interest rates have been steadily moving downward. There's some short spike periods where it went up. But 38 years is a pretty long period, and most people don't remember 3 years, much less 30 years,
so,
much less 38 years.
So when it comes time to invest, a lot of them look out there and say, okay, there's a rule of thumb for investing. You buy 60% stocks and 40% bonds, so I'm going to buy me some bonds.
Nope. Rule of thumb, almost by definition, doesn't apply to you.
By the way,
being individual.
The rule of thumb has to do, it originally wasn't rule of thumb. Did you know that?
There's multiple definitions of this. I want to hear this one.
It was rule of plumb.
Well, I thought I'd just mention that because, Bill Gross from PIMCO, the bond guru, was talking, and he's thinking that the bond market is headed for a bear market.
Oh, yeah, it is in one, probably.
Yeah. It is likely in one, and probably will be in a long-term bear market, just like it was in a long-term bull market up till now.
If you bought into a plain bond index fund, any of the major bond index funds 18 months ago, and you look at your share value today, presuming you've been taking the interest,
and also presuming that it's not a very, very short maturity, short duration type bond.
You know, longer term, intermediate or longer term bond fund, and you bought into it 18 months ago, you will probably be a little bit depressed at the share value today.
There's something really important here, and this is something most people miss. If you're buying bonds and you don't know what the word duration means, you shouldn't be buying bonds.
If you're buying stocks and you don't know what the term price to earnings ratio means or PE ratio,
you shouldn't
probably
be buying stocks.
Be buying.
You need to get educated before you do it, because professional investors, which is what we should all be. There should be no amateur investors, because your retirement is something that you're going to be doing for a living. So that, by definition, is professional. If you are heading to be a professional investor, because you'll hopefully be financially independent in your retirement, then you should understand this new profession of being financially independent. There's some really simple bits of information that you can get, and there are a lot of books out there on the subject, but most people haven't touched any of those books.
Yeah. I think a lot of people get the bonds because they're looking for, regular income.
Mm-hmm.
But I think nowadays, if you buy a good growth company with a dividend, that's probably better than the bond market right now.
You just contradicted yourself just a little bit, because growth companies, generally speaking, don't pay dividends. But I hear you what you're saying. Dividends are, when a company is growing really, really fast, it has a tendency to reinvest all of its earnings back into growth investments. As they start to pay dividends, their growth starts to slow down. Their earnings growth starts to slow down.
Right. We said that about Apple back when Apple started paying dividends. And it's like, okay, don't expect the same kind of action toward growth. They're giving these dividends and they're not using the large amount of cash that they have for growth purposes. They're socking it away in different places. Now they're going to pay some taxes on it and bring it home. That'll be
some
nice.
Some taxes on it.
Yeah.
Like $30 billion.
Yeah, talking about Apple.
$30 billion here, $30 billion there. Talking about money.
Talking about Apple, they used to be a growth way back when, but now they're not a very, they don't grow as fast anymore. So now you buy them for, you might buy them for the dividend, I guess.
Yeah, and they're part of the FANGs, which makes us nervous. There's Facebook, Apple, Amazon, and Google.
Right.
And they are
missed Netflix in there. The N in the FANG.
Oh well, yeah, and Netflix. The issue is that those companies have priced earnings ratios that are generally
Apple's is decent. The rest of them are absurd.
Yeah, and one of the reasons Apple's is decent is because Apple is not, as you said, is not growing as fast, and it is turned around and become.
I think Apple's even getting removed from the FANG, and they're putting Amazon in the A place instead of Apple.
Oh, that may be. That may be true.
Because Amazon's at a 350 price earnings ratio, which means
nothing big.
If you took today's earnings for the company, this last year's earnings, and you applied every dollar of those earnings towards the stock price, it would only take you 350 years to pay for the stock.
Peanuts, man.
It's not a problem.
Yeah.
350 years. It's no biggie.
So, okay. Well, thanks for calling.
Mm-hmm. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
We probably ought to talk a little bit, since the subject has come up, in this January 20th edition of the Personal Wealth Coach, what has happened with the markets in the last week.
Yeah,
and
let's
how,
do that.
Frankly, absurd it is, but that's okay. It's not reached – well, actually, it's not absurd. It's just surprisingly amazing, but not absurd yet. And I'll give you some perspectives on that. The Dow Jones Industrial Average, which closed at an all-time record – everything closed at a record. Friday, all-time record, which is redundant. But the Dow was up a little over 1%. The S&P 500
for the week,
the S&P 500 up 0.86.
Percent.
The Nasdaq up 1.04%. And to give you some idea how, no matter how much you say, "Woo, that is cool," and which, by the way, is why people are sending money to stocks, because they're going up theoretically. They don't actually going up. They went up. If it were to do that every week for the rest of the year, the Dow and the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ would be roughly 50% higher at the end of the year than they are today, which would be a little bit
unreasonable,
irrationally absurd. And we have another caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. Good morning. My name is Stephen.
Hi, Stephen.
Hi. How you guys doing this morning?
Good. What were you saying? You are a what?
I am an employee with the Department of Veterans Affairs.
Uh-huh.
Oh, you're a furloughed employee.
Or will be on Monday.
No, I'm not.
You're not.
No,
you're vital.
Technically, I am, and technically, I'm not. But we got a message down on Friday, late Friday, that VA employees will be working and servicing veterans.
Cool.
During the shutdown, and I just wanted to get the word out to people.
Good. Well, cool. That, you know what Thank that you. Means is you are an essential government employee.
Yeah.
We are all essential.
No. Non-essential.
not by the definition of the government.
No. The administration has officially said non-essential government employees will be asked not to show up for work on Monday morning, which I think is a really interesting concept we could go on about for a long time. A non-essential government employee.
Thank you for that. Yeah. I wanted to throw this in there, too. The military is paid through the 1st of February.
And I'm confident if the government stays shut down, there will be a bill passed through the House and the Senate and go to the president's desk saying, keep paying the military.
Right. And that's they may do individual bills at this point. But thank you. The Veterans Affairs, the VA is going to be open to serve the military and to serve the veterans, not the military. The veterans. The prior military.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
People
so,
like me.
The last time. You mentioned we had a shutdown back in 2013, whenever it was. I was told to go home at that time. So,
well, I think since then
things have changed.
Yeah, I think since then people have recognized that
the definition of what's essential has changed.
Yeah, you know, I'm really glad that somebody woke up and determined that the veterans, VA hospitals, and VA medical services are essential.
Medical services aren't essential.
We're getting better. we're figuring this out slowly.
I'm in the VBA. That is the VHA. And the VBA and the VHA will both be working. There's a misconception about the VA as a whole, that the VA is under, you know, one roof. Well, the VA is, but the VA split into two factions, the VBA, which handles the veterans' claims, and the VHA, which handles the veterans' health issues, healthcare. So the VBA, which is what I'm part of in Waco, will be working.
Cool. Well, thank you very much for letting us know. So if any of you are planning to do business with the VBA or needed to do something with the VBA on Monday, you can keep doing it, unless it snows.
I mean, it could be, but the VHA will be open too.
All right. Thank you very much for calling.
Sir.
Yeah, thanks for the call.
Love the show. Listen every Saturday.
We're sorry. You may need services from a hospital for that.
You may need to go to the VHA for some help after that.
I may need some intravenous injections. You guys take care.
Take care.
Love the show. Bye-bye.
Bye.
You know, one of the things, and we wrote this in the newsletter this week, is that we expect the effect of a government shutdown to be minimal.
At least if it's short. If it goes into multiple weeks, then we expect it to start growing with time until it eventually becomes a tidal wave. We don't expect it to be extremely long.
Well, among other things, the IRS apparently is not considered to be a vital or critical function of the United States government, because they basically they were told to stay home.
Right. If you're trying to file taxes in the beginning of February and the government's shut down and the IRS isn't accepting it and people are saying, hey, where's my refund?
Well, no, that was and that really was and is an interesting concept. The longer the government stays shut down, the slower the refunds are going to be sent out. And the slower the refunds are sent out, the more money the government gets to keep.
Well,
for longer.
Let's talk about what happened here. And I'm going to go back to September so that we can kind of build up to this, because this has been building. Yeah,
yes.
We're going to, together we shall move back in time. Where's the harp? We need to play a harp. Back in time to September.
Where's the bling when you need it?
September, I realize, in this particular kind of news cycle is ancient history. I mean, how many 24-hour cycles ago was that? That's
a bunch.
We're talking huge numbers of 24-hour cycles.
You think the cycle now runs 24 hours? I think it runs 24 minutes.
Yeah, it may be 24 minutes, and that's even more cycles of 24 minutes going back to September. In September, the president did two kind of important things. Number one, he signed a executive order beginning the suspension of the deferred action for childhood, what is the last part, DACA, childhood.
I don't know.
that basically kids that came across with illegal immigrants, they didn't choose to do it. They were brought across with their parents. They really had no choice in the matter, but they've grown up in the United States in American schools. So we'll actually go back before September. Let's go back to Barack Obama trying to pass the DREAM Act. It didn't get passed. The DREAM Act was, hey, let's give a path to citizenship.
Deferred action for childhood arrivals.
Arrival. That's the A word. Okay. Childhood arrival.
That's what happens when a woman has a baby.
Arrivals, yeah. Okay. And that only happens on Labor Day.
Okay.
So the DREAM Act didn't pass. So Barack Obama wrote an executive order called DACA saying we're not going to chase down these people that came across young, but only if they all come in and register and tell us where they are. So there's about 800,000 of these people, these children, that have now registered, and it's from immigration. Most of the immigration took place 10 years ago, back when we were talking about illegal immigration being a really, really big problem. It's not such a big problem now because the demand for it's low. Okay, so that happened. He tried to extend it with another executive order. So keep this in mind. He overreached himself, and the court said, no, you can't make more people eligible for this. This is only for kids that came in with their parents. They didn't have a choice. So part of what happened in September was the Trump administration, the president, signed an executive order beginning the suspension of that. The courts have ruled on parts of it and say you can't suspend it as fast as your order says. You can't do it over 5 months. It took a lot longer than that to set up. A lot of people, there's an administrative side of this, so you got to stop. Now, the media has reported that they've called it unconstitutional or some silliness like that. No, executive orders are pretty powerful, but you can't give an executive order like everybody has to have blue hair tomorrow, or you've got to have an administrative plan that goes with it. And that's what the courts have said. Hey, administration was not so good. We've got a caller on 773-1400. We'll get back to this right after. Caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Thanks for taking my call. About 10 days ago, I was watching CNBC, and this lady was on with Rick Santelli. And she expects the 10-year treasury to be at 2% by the end of the year.
2%?
Yeah. And I would like to know what would have to happen for that to happen.
The 10-year treasury would be at 2%.
For that to happen, we would have to have a major recession right now.
Yeah, and I don't know where she got 2%. I mean, that's weird.
We would have to have a major recession. People would have to stop trying to buy houses. People would have to stop trying to buy longer term bonds, and that's not what we're seeing in the numbers.
I don't know where she would come from to get 2%. That would be
this is something that couldn't happen.
Oh, it could.
It could. I mean, if we have a recession, if suddenly the economy stops functioning the way we're seeing it function,
would more deflation do that?
Well, yeah. But
lack of inflation and deflation would do that.
But yeah. What we would have to have is a worldwide economic dramatic slowdown that looked a lot like a recession. And
that would have to happen like right away for us to get it by the end of the year.
Yeah, we would have to be seeing the warning signs on the horizon already. There would have to be some strong indicators. I don't know where she got 2% or whether you heard her correctly, but the probability
is possible. She said it. There are some people out there that are just total bears. They predict crashes all the time, and eventually there's a crash, and so everybody says, look, they were right.
Yeah. But no, the chances of a 2% treasury by the end of the year, 2%
take very low chance,
would be probably, I would put it at this point, about maybe 2%.
Yeah, 2 to 5%.
Are you in the camp that believes it will be 3 or higher by the end of the year?
If I were smart enough.
If we could predict interest rates.
Right. I think there's a reasonable probability that we could see the 10-year go to – I mean, it's at 2.66 now. It was at 1 18 months ago.
It's possible.
It's entirely possible for it to get to 3. 3 would be a what I would refer to as a neutral level at this point.
What would have to happen for that to happen? So this is why we would say if we could predict this. Japan and Europe, their central banks would have to stop doing bond purchases. And
right.
They would have to stop it relatively quickly. Because,
which they could do.
Yeah. That would cause interest rates to start moving up in the long-term area. And they've talked about doing it, but they're not going to do it in a coordinated fashion. So trying to predict 2 central bank heads, particularly this year when the European folks are about to replace all of their economic people, they're going to replace everybody this year.
I think it would not be at all unreasonable, and I think there's probably better than a 50% chance that the 10-year will go to 3 by the end of the year, but there's certainly no guarantees that that's going to happen.
Let me explain that for a minute. Interest rates are just supply and demand like anything else. If there's a lot of money out there, people are saying, I want to loan money. I want to loan you money to buy a house. I want to loan you money to whatever. And there's a lot of people wanting to loan, people that want to buy a bond. They're making a loan when they do that. If there's a lot of people doing that, it keeps interest rates low, because if you want to get a loan, you've got a lot of competition out there trying to get you a loan.
Mm-hmm.
All these people are saying, I have money, you want money, let us compete against each other. That keeps interest rates low. As long as the European Central Bank and the Japanese Central Bank are out there as part of that competition, they're buying bonds, they're making loans to people and to governments. That keeps interest rates low, because there's a lot of people, a lot of money waiting to be loaned, and not as many people trying to get the loan. Interest rates go up because more people are trying to get loans, and either the same amount or less people are trying to give loans. And as credit ratings go up, as more money is put into the pot, if you say 20% down payment for sure instead of the zero down type thing, that lowers interest rates. There's less risk around it. And that's the sort of thing that we're seeing. Now, going forward, we're going to see the European Central Bank stop buying back bonds. We're going to see the Japanese Central Bank stop buying back bonds, but it's not going to be coordinated. They're not going to say, on Tuesday, both of us are stopping at the same time with no announcement. That's not how it works. So it's really hard to predict how high it can go in a short period of time. But what we can say is that we are still, if you don't count the last 18 months or so, the where we've been there, we are still at historic lows for interest rates,
right.
Which means that historically, this is really abnormally low. Could we go lower? Possibly, but it would take really, really stress, really large stresses on the economy to do it.
Given inflation rates as they are, and they don't seem to be going up real fast, and everything else, this is not my opinion, it's a consensus of the big thinker economist.
Do you share the opinion?
I do share the
opinion. Then it is your opinion.
But I don't claim to be smart enough to arrive at this opinion. I just say their arguments make sense. That a neutral 10-year bond rate for the Treasury right now would be around 3%. Neutral meaning non-stimulative. The lower interest rates are for the 10-year bond, the more stimulative, the more something is being pumped into the system.
Yeah. It means that if you do get a loan at that lower rate, if you look ahead at inflation, you're likely to get – you'd be making money on the deal long term rather than losing money.
If you have inflation running around a little over 2% and you have the 10-year treasury at 3%, that's a pretty normal relationship historically. And then the interest rates go higher as you get longer terms. And the reason it's below that right now, and as Jake alluded just a moment ago, is that there's a couple of reasons, but probably the primary reason is both in Europe and in Japan, which are really big players in the market, and maybe it's going on in China and we just don't know about it, the governments are buying bonds.
We called that quantitative easing when we did it.
And that forces interest rates below their normal relationship. Now, we're in a new universe. We're in a global economy, whereas before we went into the crisis, we were still pretty much a national economy.
I would have to say we're in a more mature universe, not a new one.
Right. But the more global we get, the more what happens in
Europe or Japan
affects us. And by the way, that has nothing to do with trade treaties or anything else. It's just the reality of communications and finance and the way it works. So
we've got to play some commercials.
Okay. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, we really appreciate the call. Good questions. Hopefully decent answers. Who knows about that part? We've got some commercials to play. We'll be back on the other side with more of the Personal Wealth Coach. If you'd like to join our conversation, the number to call in here is 254-773-1400. We'll be back on the other side with more of the Personal Wealth Coach.
And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure on this, the 20th day of January 2018. Where is January going? I don't know.
Disappearing.
Disappearing slowly, into the past.
Slowly disappearing into the past.
The past is gobbling it up. Telephone number to call in here if you'd like to ask us about something to do with investments or economics is 773-1400. Of course, the area code is 254. And we want to disclaim, any of you that heard that commercial about flipping houses, we want to disclaim that we have nothing to do with the commercials that go on here, and we would like to caution you that flipping houses,
it's risky.
It's extremely risky, and it's really good for the people who sell you the programs. They generally make money, but it's possible to lose a lot of money flipping houses.
Yeah, and we've known people who have come to us who have lost money and made money. Just be aware that you generally only hear about the people who made money. There are a lot of people who lost money.
Very frankly, I'm going to tell you my experience with that in talking to investors who've done this. If you don't have to get a loan, in other words, if you can purchase a house that is in lousy condition,
right,
and you have cash to purchase it with which to purchase it, and you have cash to do the repairs, upgrades, and fixing up on it, and then you can turn around and sell it because you've studied the market.
Yeah,
and determined that the house would be worth a lot more. Boy, it is complicated because if the neighborhood is in bad shape, you won't make any money.
And you have to throw in closing costs.
Right.
If you don't have cash, you're coming in, you want to flip the house. Imagine $10,000 on a $250,000 house as closing costs twice. So yeah. $20,000 you got to make back before you make any profit.
And there's a lot of people. There's an article in Time magazine from, I think, July of last year that pointed out that the vast majority of amateurs who are getting started basically lose everything they invest and a whole bunch more. Wind up with some debts that they didn't have and cry in their beer thereafter.
Yeah, if they drink beer. Yeah, some people are drinking water because they can't afford the beer at that point.
Right.
But we were just talking about interest rates. I want to go back to talking about the government shutdown. But interest rates and housing go together hand in hand. People do not buy houses based on the price tag. I know people think that they buy houses based on the price tag, but they really buy houses based on the monthly payment.
Carrying cost.
The carrying cost. How much does it cost me out of my monthly cash flow? When interest rates go up, the monthly cash flow is the first thing that gets pinched. That has a downward pressure on housing prices. So getting into house flipping, you might be able to make some money doing it, but we've got a historical interest rate trend that's going to be putting some downward pressure on that. Now back, I was talking about September and how we got to the government shutdown. Right after President Trump signed the executive order starting the phase out of DACA, he had a meeting with Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer. Do you remember this?
Yes.
It was a big deal because they met with the Republicans as well during the meeting in the middle of the day, but the president was rather upset with the Republicans in Congress specifically for not passing the Obamacare repeal, the Affordable Care Act. So there we are with the ACA again, DACA and ACA. Coming forward, he says, all right, we're going to have dinner tonight with Nancy and Chuck. Nancy and Chuck went out and immediately announced that they'd made a deal with the president to reinstate DACA and to deal with the wall as a separate issue. The president, the following morning, sent out a tweet and said, that's not what I said. They're lying. They responded, he's lying, back and forth. He's responded tons of times. Maybe I should record these conversations.
Maybe he should. I think that would be good.
Yeah, it'd be great. Record the conversations he's having with people.
Nixon did.
Yeah, I mean, how did that go wrong?
What could go wrong?
Yeah, I mean, if the question about what he said, the most recent conversation came out on it, it would be a little problem.
Piece of cake. Record the president's conferences with members of Congress.
He said it again very recently. Exactly what they said he said.
In front of a bunch of reporters.
In front of the reporters, the Democrats, Chuck Schumer said, we want a clean DACA. And Trump said, President Trump said, yeah, I'm open to that. Let's do it. And immediately the Republicans around him gasped and started leaning over to talk to him and saying, clean means no amendments, not attached to anything else we're negotiating for. So this is one of the problems, one of the benefits as well, of having an outsider, a non-politician, come into the political world. He doesn't know what the terminology means. When the Democrats ask for a clean act and he says, sure, what he's just obligated himself to without knowing it is, okay, you get exactly what you want and I'm not going to negotiate at all. So their first opening salvo, they're going to make this big demand. They sit down, they say, we want a clean DACA. And Trump says, okay, and that was it. And the Democrats go, well, that was an easy negotiation. The Republicans lean over and say, no, no, no. And then Trump comes in and says, oh, sorry, that's not what I meant. I mean, with the wall. And the Democrats say, we can't trust you. You're saying these. So basically they have different definitions for the words that they're using. And since the DACA executive order was written to get rid of it over a period of time, you got to remember that there was a second executive order in the Obama administration about DACA that the courts stopped because it was overreaching. It didn't have an administrative backup to it. President Trump writes this one and the courts have stopped it because it's overreaching. It hasn't had administrative backing to it. It's going to get stopped. It's just going to take longer and the government has to have kind of a roadmap to follow. You can't just say from now on everyone does fill in the blank without putting in a plan to do it. And these executive orders that have been going out from an outsider doesn't understand what's going on, but even the insiders don't understand it. Obama was not an outsider, and he still did executive orders that the courts stopped.
And this issue, I don't know if you followed, basically the bill that passed the House, which is the one that that didn't pass the Senate and probably won't pass the Senate, said to the Democrats, you can either have the Child Health Insurance Program,
CHIP,
or you can have DACA, but you can't have both. And the what happened is the bill that passed the House has the Children's Insurance Program on it, but it does not have anything to do with DACA, with the deferred action. And the negotiations with the White House and with the president, I mean with the president and with the Republicans in the Senate, said we'd get that DACA would go along with the funding bill. And everybody's changed position on that. I mean, it really boils down to the fact.
Even if you look back at the headlines and the articles back in September, White House aides were saying we can separate DACA from the wall. We can negotiate with DACA without the wall. Well, most recently, that is not what they're saying. So what's happened here is that due to ignorance on what terminology means and how Congress does negotiations, Trump has painted himself into a corner. That meeting that he had with Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer in September also led to a very short-term extension of the debt ceiling, which has then been extended again short-term, which means that right in the middle of the primaries for the Republicans, the debt ceiling is going to come up, which is going to cause turmoil for the Republican Party. This was a win for the Democrats. And Trump didn't understand that at the time. He was upset with the Republicans for not repealing Obamacare. So that's where we are. We are moving forward from that. Basically, I don't know how soon we're going to get this done. It depends on how stubborn both sides are. But it's funny because the Republicans, including the president, have all shown support for doing a legislative act similar to the executive order for DACA. But they're not doing it. And the Democrats won it. The Democrats, from their perspective, the Republicans have promised this and promised this. The Republicans say, no, we haven't. We didn't mean it when we said it like that. And that's why we are where we are. If I were a parent of these children, I would be knocking heads together, because it's party politics. It's my team versus your team. We're forgetting we're all Americans. Who's gonna be hurt in this negotiation? Well, Congress won't be. The president won't be. But there are a lot of people that will be hurt if the extension of this shutdown goes through the beginning of February. Then we'll be back to not paying the military, and that's a problem.
President Trump was saying that the military won't be functioning. It actually is, and all the ongoing military programs, the contracts, the development, and so on.
All that's covered.
It's already funded. It's continuing to function. The military will be paid at the beginning of the month, and I'm, again, quite sure. As a matter of fact, John Carter, your and our representative, sponsored a bill last time we had a shutdown to keep paying the military, and it just zoomed right through both houses.
It will happen again. He may sponsor it again. He may not even have to change anything but the dates on it. Just dust it off, change the dates, throw it in there, and it'll get passed.
And frankly, it's very unfortunate that the extremists on both sides of the arguments here are shutting the government down effectively. And if the government stays shut down, we gradually start to lose some services that are pretty important.
Yeah. This should not be a negotiating technique by either party. It should not be, I'm going to make you shut down the government. It should not be, I'm going to shut the government down if you don't.
Well, let me throw one other item in here that I think is important. We're about out of time for this hour, but this is the first time that a government shutdown has occurred when one party controls both houses in the Senate, both houses in Congress, and the presidency.
Right.
And very frankly, there is a problem with the governing party right now, in that it has its own subdivisions where it can't agree with itself on what is necessary to move forward. Normally, historically, when we reach it, first off, it was at the end of September that we were supposed to have a budget.
Right.
And we haven't passed a budget yet. We haven't passed an ongoing funding law that says the government can continue to function for the next year. We're about halfway through the government fiscal year.
We're a quarter of the way through.
Well, September, let's see, October, November, December. Yeah, a third of the way through, yeah. Roughly. But
I would say a quarter.
Okay, a quarter. But normally it's historically passed a couple of months before the end of the fiscal year, and that way the government agencies can plan in advance for what's going to happen. And I'm not going to shoot at one side or the other or support one side or the other on this. However, generally speaking, it is considered to be the responsibility of the governing party to get the budget passed, not the minority party.
Right.
And if the governing party can't set things up to get the government funded, it is an indication they're not doing a very good job of governing.
All they need is to get 9 Democrats to agree. If they cannot get 9 Democrats to agree to this, then they're not doing a very good
job.
They
also have to get all the Republicans to agree. Right,
they did not.
They were down 6 votes on the Republican side.
Yeah, in the House. In the Senate. Yeah. No, it was a 50-49 vote with John McCain not being present.
Right, okay, so they're down 5.
They've got 51 votes.
Well, yeah, they got 51 votes because some Democrats, but there's 5 Republicans who voted against it.
Oh, and then, okay. All right. So we've got a caller on 773-1400. Caller, you're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
I actually feel like the Christians walking into the Colosseum where the lions are waiting. But being old enough to remember this entire discussion going in under Reagan, you know, there was amnesty given, but the understanding was that the laws that had to govern with illegal immigrants coming in would be followed to the letter. And I think that what is missing in this discussion is the fact that the actual laws on the books have not been followed.
Well, actually, right? that wasn't the Reagan agreement. There's a you might want to go back and research that. Reagan said, let's do two things. Number one, let's solve the immediate problem by dealing with the people who are here, who have good records, and who are necessary to our economy. Two, let's have immigration reform and rewrite the laws.
Every president since him has had that on the agenda, and it has not passed. Any president since Reagan.
It passed the Senate three different times. An immigration reform plan has passed the Senate that actually balances out our needs against actual immigration. And each time the House, the conservatives in the House have killed it. And the issue is we're basically working with a set of immigration laws that were made up in the late 19th century and early 20th century that are irrational and unbalanced and don't have anything to do with what we need in our economy today.
Right. I agree completely with one area that the president is saying here. We need to get rid of a lottery system. We need to make it a merit system. We need to talk about what the economy is actually demanding. He hasn't said this part. He would lower immigration. But if we look at what is it that businesses need, we're at full employment right now. If anybody that's trying to hire right now knows what I'm talking about, you're not getting a lot of really good applicants for the job. Just 18 months ago, we were. 24 months ago, it was amazing. Now we're getting very, very few qualified people to do the jobs, any job. And where we are moving forward means that without some form of immigration, we're not going to see the kind of growth in the economy without really big automation.
I'm basically going to lay this where it belongs, and I'm going to make some people unhappy with me, probably. At this point in time, the president steps in, and let's do some common sense. What? Go ahead.
Are we a nation of laws? And if so, even if they're imbalanced or whatever, are we supposed to wink at them? I mean,
well, no, I think they should be obeyed.
No, but, you know, we had a fifth.
Well, let me finish, please.
Okay.
You know, I live on the south side of San Antonio and have been there for 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
My impression of what is flooding into this country is developing into a culture war between, you know, no assimilation. It is a culture war. You can talk all you want about eager, but there were laws passed for reform of welfare under Clinton, which have been winked at since. And if we have labor pool within our country that can be brought up by forced education, if they want to remain on, you know, I have actually seen a report come out that there are 10 states in the country that have more people on welfare than they actually have people working. And I have also seen a report that came out of a non-biased outfit that said that the expenditure of this country is close to $150 billion in support and only $19 billion in taxes coming out of the people who are flooding into this country who do not have the training but are here because of the chain migration, because of the, well, just not enforcing what is on the books.
Well,
I'll shut up and go away.
No, you don't have to shut up and go away. You got a perspective. Right. I will suggest something to you. You said you got the data about, but you might want to, anytime you get data like that from a news source, I suggest you do what we do, and that is go back and look at the census data.
There's an article on this on factcheck.org. If you go to factcheck.org, the email that you're talking about that talked about more people on welfare than employed was an email that was going around in 2011 and 2012. And it's viral. I mean, it went everywhere. But the reality is that there are no states that have more people on welfare than employed by such a large margin that it's impossible to – what we can say is that there are some states that are receiving more benefits than they pay in as the majority in taxes.
Well.
And that is a different definition of Medicare, but there's a group of underemployed people. So, and it's a different. You throw in Medicaid, you throw in welfare, and you throw in the earned income tax credit, and you'll realize that low income people, in a lot of cases, receive back more than they pay out. And we're out of time for the hour. Unfortunately, we got to cut for break. Thank you very much for the call. We went over time. We'll be back next hour with more of the Personal Wealth Coach.
Around the world this weekend, Turkish warplanes.